Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to be talking about spirituality. Yes, we've spoken about that many times. Everyone wants to know a template. How can I get there? It's got to be this lofty place out in the sky, and what do I have to give up? Can I still drive my car? Do I have to have my same friends? Or do I even have to have the same job? So many people are searching these days for answers that they think are outside of themselves. It's a place they have to get to. Maybe it's just a retreat they go to with their girlfriends and they come back home and everything's hunky-dory. How can spirituality, how can the connection with who we are, why are we here, what is this really all about, come to you not on a template, not from a guru screaming, this is the way it has to be, follow my hot coals down the street and here we go, kind of idea. It's almost, what is the meaning of life for you and how can you find that? Questions, lots of them. Today my guest is Jane Galloway and her book is The Gateways, The Wisdom of 12-Step Spirituality. And Jane will be taking us along the journey on how she suggests you can find some of the answers that you might be looking for and how that might look. Sometimes we say, I want this. We say, this is how I'm going to get it. Yet when it comes, something like love or compassion or support or maybe just an idea, we say, oh, no, it didn't have all the bells and whistles. It didn't walk like a duck, quack like a duck, and look like a duck with a blue stripe down the back. Therefore, it's not the way it's supposed to show up. We let so many of the gifts of our lives disappear because we might just not even recognize them. So today we'll talk about how to recognize them. Jane, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Hi, thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So, Jane, don't you think sometimes our lives, they go on these, you know, they're merry old little way down the highway, and we might miss some of the, you know, great signs along the way. We might list a great adventure off the exit, and sometimes we just plain get stuck, right?
Absolutely. You know, I think John Lennon was so smart when he said, life is what happens while we're busy making other plans, and it's easy to remember that sometimes. But the real miracle of life, of course, is right in the moment. And so many of us are making plans continually, including me, that so we do miss. Yeah, we miss these moments, which, and it's all, you know, part of the journey. So,
you know, I think it depends on what decade you are in life. It depends on what experiences you've had so far. And also it depends on how many times you have hung by your fingernails over the side of the edge, you know, to whether or not.
Very good point.
Don't you think? I think, you know, sometimes whether or not you've been able to say, whoa, what is life all about? You know, myself, I remember so many times hanging over the edge. And I actually, my most favorite place is called the abyss. The abyss is where you're sitting and everything is white and there's nothing there. And it's not guiding, directing, pushing. There's no past hanging up your baggage and there's no, oh, I got to put them puzzle pieces together or else it doesn't show my picture kind of place. You know, don't you think sometimes people they're on all of these adventures and these journeys?
Well, I'll tell you, you talk about being in the, you know, having your, holding on with your fingernails, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my work, certainly the 12-step spirituality work, but really all of my work, has to do with acknowledging and sharing with others my own journey. I've been at that abyss my whole life.
Right.
And that's, you say it depends on what decade you are, perhaps, but it also depends upon life experiences and how
right.
one grows up. And I grew up with a lot of trauma in my world. And so,
mm-hmm.
and many, many people who become addicted do. And so we're trying to figure out, our nervous system is all hooked up to adrenaline and to cortisol and et cetera. And so, yes, it's great to be in a place where we surrender to not thinking that we have to know the answer or know the exact next step. It's also can be quite scary for people who grow
right.
up in chaos. And I think my work is really focused ideally for people who are recovering from childhoods and then adulthoods of missing some of the steps of development and realizing that in order to keep moving forward and doing the life they want to have, really at some point we have to go back and fill in those developmental areas that didn't get built. So, you know, it's funny because when you grow up, like I did, and I had unbelievably talented, creative parents, but when you grow up, but there was a lot of trauma there and a lot of chaos. And when you grow up in chaos, being in a place that's ill-defined, it can be scary. So I think it depends on what your issues are, too.
You know, I think sometimes, you know, I've always said on this show, you know, God does not sign for UPS. So if you think you're carrying that crap with you, good luck with that. You know, so many times we seem to carry our baggage with us as a label that defines us. We can't wait to write our obituary. We want to make sure everybody has all of the good things you did because you don't want them to remember the bad things. Or, you know, we also say, well, we have to move away because now people know about us or people know our secrets or people know what's going on or we don't seem to, quote, fit in anymore. And I think sometimes that's a challenge to be able to say, what is really the secret that I'm holding behind and why is that? You know, I too grew up with, you know, consistent amount of issues throughout my life, and I think I took each issue and, you know, reflecting back on it after I've written about it, is looking at it and saying what really went on there, look at it from the other person's perspective, and then look at it, what purpose in life did it have? And I think sometimes that's really, okay, that's another level that we can get to, but what we really want to talk about is the beginning ones. When you're going through it, be in it. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes we always want to shortchange it or change it and say, I'm having pain. I have to get out of it. Well, what does the pain feel like? What are you fearing? What is your secret that's holding behind it? You know, sometimes all of these things have a meshwork, and to supersede that and, you know, like try to come out of it, it's almost like it's part of you when you're shortchanging, you know? You're gonna come back there again eventually, you know, which is what we see with addictions sometimes. Sometimes we see that with successive life experiences, people keep recreating, and it's because they're missing those pieces, and that's just exactly what you're talking about, right?
I mean, you mentioned a word that I don't really relate to, which is labels.
Right.
I think that people sometimes, that it is true, that many people look to identify themselves by their challenges. And
mm-hmm.
Certainly my work is developmental in nature and evolutionary in nature, and I'm totally not interested in that. I'm interested in how people keep free enough to move forward. And what we've discovered through so much of the neurobiological work that's really begun to get so wonderfully to be part of, you know, our world now, we understand that when we have traumas, I mean, we know about post-traumatic stress that used to be called shell shock or whatever. They noticed that there was this pattern of people hitting a certain, you know, a moment with having triggers, external triggers, et cetera, and then having an emotional reaction that seemed beyond their control. And really, that's kind of what I'm talking about. I don't relate mm-hmm. to labels. I mean, my work is about how do you get free and become integrated. And so I taught preschool many, many years ago in New York City. And went to a wonderful graduate school called the Bank Street College of Education, and that was, I didn't even know it at the time because I was surrounded by excellence, and so this was the school that I was told, you know, look, that's a great place to go and learn some stuff about early childhood education, and as with all learning, for me, it was so interesting because I was able to see, wow, how did I even make it through my childhood now that I'm learning all this this stuff? But I learned about Jean Piaget, and Piaget is the really kind of considered to be the father of developmental psychology, and he talks about different levels of growth that the infant and the early child goes through, and talks about how important it is to not skip stages because we're going to be going through those stages anyway. So when I think that even in the years since then, because I was an actress for many years and then went back to school and became, you know, started studying this kind of psycho-spiritual end of things. And through all of the years, I was very aware of this thing of having certain places where I was weak. So it's really not about a label, but for instance, my family moved I was in fourth grade, and it was not an easy move. It was there was a lot of stuff going on in my life, a lot of trauma having to do with the family, and I missed the jump from multiplication to division. I missed it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really learn the multiplication tables, and I didn't really they kept testing my IQ and moving me to more and more accelerated classes. But IQ tests are largely based on language-based skills. But I missed this whole part of math. And it has, quite frankly, I was just thinking about this last night, it has really messed with me. It has been a real issue for me because I have excelled in so many other areas. And I was fortunate enough to go, okay, well, that's not my strong suit. So I, you know, was Broadway and danced and sang and acted and wrote, and now I've written this book and run spiritual centers, et cetera. But when the managerial part of the business, even my own personal business as an actor, came into play, you know, you've got to have a basic grasp of mathematics in order to keep a life going. And I think I'm even a little dyslexic about numbers. And it's funny because you and I, and that could be considered a label, so I won't label it that. But just, in other words, they kind of go out of my field of sight. I'm aware of that sometimes.
Right.
So even our first interview, I knew what time it was, but it said Central Time next to it, and I thought it was Pacific Time. I presumed that.
Mm-hmm.
But I get tired reading numbers. I don't get tired. I can read 100 books. But reading numbers, I get tired. So this is a good example of that's a place in me that isn't a super strong place. Now, I did consider going back and trying to, you know, do remedial math, but I've been so kind of purpose-driven and focused in my other work. But I do remember, as we're talking, I had to take algebra over in high school. I had to take summer school, right, because I was going to not make it, I guess, out of high school. I did well in all my other things, but math was not great. So I took this summer school algebra class, and at one point this lovely teacher said to me, listen, this is not your thing. This is not going to be your thing. I'm going to give you a passing grade, and you go on and have a wonderful life as an actor, because I was already at that point focused
right.
on that.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, there was a weak place there. And so I think if it doesn't get in your way, that's great. I mean, if you can always have a partner or a friend or a business partner or somebody who can fill in some of those places that aren't as strong, because we all have them. And some of them are caused by trauma, and some of them are just, you know, you're good at, you know, making apple pies and I'm good at making cherry pies or something. I don't know. But you know, we all have those things. And so as we go through life, if it begins to become a problem, then it's good to have some sort of tools, I think. And certainly spirituality for me has always come through the lens of something that also hooked up with that developmental thing that I learned through Piaget. And then after learning about Piaget, when I went back to school after, you know, kind of in the middle of my acting career, I started really studying developmental psychology and getting into Abraham Maslow and Eric Erickson. And they do all of these developmental models saying, you know, from this age to this age, you're dealing with issues of this. So you've heard people say, you know, and then you go to the next one, blah, 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 all this kind of stuff, and that we have issues all the way up until we draw our last breath, and they're developmental issues. So if you think of them kind of as having a scaffolding that's supporting us, if we conquer those developmental challenges successfully, we have a really good base under us. And certainly when I came into recovery, which was many, many years ago, I had certain areas that were so well developed that I didn't have to do that much work on them. I mean, my career was going pretty well. I was, you know, I had a few areas that were really good. There were other areas where I was just totally, impoverished. And maybe that's almost that abyss place you're talking about. I came into recovery and realized, oh, my God, I mean, I don't even know. I don't have a clue about this part of my life. And so I began to study like crazy, and I think something, we're fortunate when that happens, when something really ignites us and gets us on a spiritual path, you know. And I studied, and I was like realizing, wait a minute, there are all these developmental models, and they're all kind of like ladders. And even in the Bible, the story of Jacob's ladder. Jacob's out in the wilderness, and God comes to him and shows him in a dream, I think it is, but shows him a ladder to heaven, Jacob's ladder. And you may have sung it in camp or whatever, but, you know. So I began to look at these different models, and for years I was drawing. I was drawing them, just drawing them, because I also paint. And so I was drawing, okay, the 12 steps, and then I was drawing the chakra system and drawing Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And so I began to realize, wait a minute, and the Kabbalah, Sephira, the tree of life, they're all developmental systems, and they're all along a kind of a ladder. And they're really all to support you, to support us, in having not those places where our feet fall out from under us. And I would say, if you ask me a multiplication answer right now, that might be a place where my feet would fall out from under me. So it's that. It's not even a label. It's really just about, that's not my strongest area. I have really strong areas. And I even have an earned master's and doctorate from a very, you know, wonderful institution. But I didn't have to do math to get those. So I began to really look at these. And then as I was a minister, and I was ordained in a, you know, kind of more traditional Christian denomination, I began to understand that the theology was really, in so many ways, very punitive, very male-oriented, very you can't do this, and original sin-oriented and all this stuff. And I was like, you know what, this is not my experience at all, and I don't need one more person to tell me something's wrong with me. I'm trying to figure out what's right with me, you know? Mm-hmm. And so really one of my and so I didn't even know quite how much I was compiling all of this information inside of me and through lived experience. But one of my congregation members in New York City a few years ago said, you know, you can teach, and I talk about this in the book, you may have read it, but I say, you know, she said, you can teach so many things, but we want to know what works for you. And I instantly said, oh, well, that's easy. It's the 12 steps as a backbone, but not the culture of AA, and I want to make that distinction. It's really the mystic path of the 12 steps, plus all of this other psycho-spiritual body-mind-spirit stuff I've been doing for years to support that. And she said, write that. We need that. So that's really what made me write this book. Was kind of, and I think it's really a non-punitive language. It's a wellness language. It's a language that describes how to access these channeled, amazing 12 steps in a way that, how to utilize them to grow along spiritual lines without having to hang your hat on any particular theology. And being a minister and having been the leader, the spiritual director of several communities, you know, you need something to rely upon. You need some sort of backbone. So that's kind of why I wrote the book.
You know, when you were talking in the beginning about PTSD and stuff, and I live in New Orleans, and when we had Hurricane Katrina, you know,
yeah,
many people
sure
stayed,
did.
And I can honestly say that every June 1st until the end of September, I don't do any radio shows because everybody's on watchful eye. That's hurricane season. However, if you look back in history, the children who were 3, 4, 5, maybe till about the age of 17 at that time, had a very great shock because what was the norm is no longer. And parents couldn't handle it and everything, and everything was just kind of like you're ripped out of everywhere and everything.
Yeah.
And now we look back on it after the last 13 years and we say, what have we learned? And what we've learned is that now those 3- and 4-year-olds are now very, very violent. They're killing their girlfriends with babies and everything. There's been instances where, you know, women's be shoved out of car on the highway and everybody would just run over the body. And it's, you know, all of these different things. And what we really found was that it was a lack for the human human being. And I think
it's a bonding break, too, a big bonding break. Yeah.
Right. It was the idea that the human is no longer there is no value, there is no safety, there is no security. And the concept and the idea, I really think the spiritual community and the religious community totally missed the boat because,
yeah.
I mean, that would have been the greatest opportunity to be able to save souls versus labeling again, you know, as we talk about it, oh, well, you're from there, oh, you're this, oh, you're that, when really everybody needed spiritual and counseling.
So isn't that interesting?
Zero.
So there's so, I agree. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many failures of organized religion.
Right, and we see it now, and they're like, oh, we're going to come down and we're going to fix your house. And it's like, I don't want you to fix my house. I want you to sit down and talk to me. I don't want you to come down and do this, that, or the other, what you think, and bring your thoughts and your ideas.
Yeah, what do you need?
To superimpose upon me. Can you sit and just have a conversation? I think really if we think about the 12 steps also, it's about communing with someone where they are, being with them where they are, not trying to make them into something that you think is wrong with them, you know, that constant.
But the 12 steps are an individual path, so it doesn't have to do with giving those to anybody. So it's really about an inner path.
But to be able to open that door.
For anyone who needs them.
You know, so many people don't even know the door is there or what the door looks like, you know, sometimes. Mm-hmm. And when these grave things happen, people just think of the old ways or the how it might be or how they see others. You know, everyone's so quick to define it. Do you know what I mean? And to sit down and say, you know, just be with where you are, and then how can you yourself, you know, see things going forward? In other words, it's really about the inner work. It's really about what are you made out of, you know, what's inside of you, and connecting with that and going forward. In other words, it's not about everything outside of you. It's not like everybody walking around, I have a label, I'm this, I'm that, you know.
So what's the label thing mean to you? Because you've mentioned it a few times now. So I'm interested that that's something that interests
That there
you.
Isn't a label. That, you know, it's really about how can, you know, sometimes we see when people say, oh, I have an addiction. Oh, people, I have this or I have that. I think it's really about telling their story for a reference point. Some people take it as a label and they drag it along as their baggage, that they're the victim. They haven't quite made that jump. And I think your book makes that jump.
I mean, it's good to get a diagnosis. I don't really think it's – I mean, yeah, I agree. I mean, certainly that's one of the things about the 12-step program. That's why I make the distinction between the 12-step culture and the treating of the illness, because the illness needs – I mean, you know, I just had surgery, and I had – you know, I danced for years professionally and ran and – messed up the removed the cartilage from my hip, so I had hip replacement surgery, and it was so fantastic, and I'm back, you know, I'm back, which is great, but it wasn't a toothache. It was a hip. It was a hip ache. It wasn't a sore foot. You know what I'm saying? So you have to.
Right.
It's not so much labeling. I think you have to identify. You have to zero in and say, okay, this is what this is. I was so relieved at the beginning, and most people are, if you're dealing with recovery from an addiction, certainly, to discover, wait a minute, okay, this is really a medical issue and also a body, mind, spirit issue. But the point is, yes, you can get stuck on the bridge. There's a terminology within the program that talks about, these steps and working these steps are a bridge back to life. And my concern has indeed been that a lot of people get on the bridge and bring their camping gear and never get back into life. So, yeah,
right.
I think that can be something that really sticks us. But at the beginning, it's really just a diagnosis. I mean, you have to, once you know the diagnosis, at least in my case and most people I work with, because I work with people who are in various levels of recovery from a lot of different things in life and may or may not have addiction as part of that. But the diagnosis is a good starting place.
Right, and you also talk about, you take the 12 steps and you talk about the first three as gateways, the foundation, and how vitally important that is, just as you said before about having that foundation.
Well, a three-legged stool, and that's right from the literature of the 12 steps. The first three are, the first opening of the gateways. So I use the gateways for all of the steps. But, yep, that's the foundation. And they talk about a three-legged stool, and if you think about a three-legged stool, a two-legged stool doesn't cut it, but a three-legged stool does. It supports us.
Right. Can you share also, too, Jane, about your book? Because your book is very, very different and unique. When you talk about each step, and you have things like chakras in here, you have questions, you have some comments, you talk about all kinds of different things. This is nothing like any book that you would have picked up before, talking about 12 steps of anything.
Okay, right, and your question. Yeah, as I just said before, the way I came upon that was I was already making these drawings, realizing the chakras relate to, they're all developmental processes. They're all developmental processes. So I did the bento box or the template for working the gateways toward the end of the book, and I show visually how these things can be worked kind of as a lived spiritual path. But I also, in the beginning of the book, really get into kind of the nature of how these steps even came to be, how they ended up being downloaded through this group of kind of like clueless guys who were drunks and desperate, and they turned out to be this amazing recovery and healing path for all kinds of things. I mean, they find that sociopaths, you know, it's been said forever, for a long time in the field that, you know, victimology, the field of victimology, that sociopathy is not, you can't heal it. And yet, there has been miraculous healing through utilizing the 12 steps with people who have this kind of, it's kind of a separation from one's own self. And so somehow the steps are just this amazing tool. So I correlate them with each different level of work on the body. I also studied Ohashi Shiatsu for a number of years, Japanese healing, both body work, but also Japanese and Chinese medicine. And so I include the meridian system. I see these all as kind of different cultural models for this developmental support system. So, for instance, if you're dealing with a first chakra issue, we're talking about power, just basic power and foundation. And so you can, a gateway, I kind of talk about the gateway essences, kind of like what's the essence of that step, of that level. And I look at the chakra, at kind of what's involved with that. The functions are safety, grounding, the right to love. The location on the body is the base of the spine. Then the sacred geometric shape is an upside-down triangle. The color is red, musical note, middle C, gemstone therapy, red jasper, the Chinese meridian, the gland, and a ritual. So I show many, many different ways to embody working that step. And, you know, we look at that spiral idea of spiral growth on a spiritual path, and We come back to things. Sometimes I'm not grounded because I'm in a new situation or I've had a new loss or something that I need to assimilate. So I'll go right back to that. I need to get grounded. You know, I'm sure you've said it, or certainly I have. You know, wow, I don't feel very grounded today. And so I developed some tools to show people some of these tools. But the interesting thing is I've used all of these. I've used all of these over the years. I've been, you know, working this path for a very long time. I told someone the other day, I was actually at the doctor's office, and I, you know, have this wonderful young doctor who is, you know, in her 30s. And I said, you know, I have been working these steps longer than you've been alive. And I sounded like my own grandmother to me or something, but it's true. Right. So it's become second nature, and it's become part of kind of how I live. But what I see is that a lot of people are looking for some tools, you know, and so this is really a toolkit in many ways. Also, the language, as I describe how to work through each one of the steps, and I do that, in the beginning of the book, is non-punitive. It is non-gendered. I don't talk about God as a he or a she. It is non-illness-based. My work is wellness-based. So this is a template. I see this as a book that hopefully people go back to and back to. Say, wait a minute, wait, I'm feeling something at this chakra, or I'm feeling something at this level. I want to go back and work on this. And you can go back and kind of refer to it there. But so the combining of all those different elements is something I've been actually doing intuitively for many, many years, all of those zillions of years that I've been working working these steps. I'll tell you one thing. I talk about the gemstone. For instance, I got really ill at one point, you know, years ago in New York City. And I was in the hospital, and it was a scary kind of a thing. Anyway, I was at home afterwards, and I was kind of trying to get back, you know, on my feet. And I went to a holistic healer, a psychic healer, really, and she was so interesting. And she told me, okay, what you need to do is, and she told me a number of things, different dietary things and a couple different, I can't remember it all, but this one I really remember well. She said, you need to drink some water with the property of blue in it. And I was at the time thinking, what is she talking about? So she said, do you have any lapis lazuli? And I said, actually, I do. And she said, okay, put that lapis into a glass of water and put it on the windowsill for 12 hours in the sun, you know, in the sun and whatever it would be. And then drink it. Don't drink the lapis, but drink the water, because it will have the properties of that blue lapis in it. And I was kind of desperate enough. I'm very willing, too. I love trying things. I mean, if it works, great. If it doesn't work, next. You know, I'm from St. Louis, Missouri, and one of the things people in Missouri is called the show me state. So it's like, show me. Okay, so I'll try it. If it doesn't work, I can tell you it doesn't work. But these things actually were working. So I drank it. So part of the thing of learning that these gemstones carry different properties with them. And I've used that over the years, too. So I've used all of these tools. And it was funny, because when I began to know that it was time to write the book actually wrote me. I mean, it was a three-year process. But the book, I mean, I knew exactly, inside of me, I knew exactly what came next. You know, I knew exactly what it was supposed to look like. So I kind of described the whole way these things were created at the beginning, almost like a, I don't know. I mean, it's a background, you know, theologies, of course, you know, tell you a contextual framework. So I talk about how these steps were downloaded. A lot of people don't even know. They think, you know, that these guys sat down and wrote these steps. They didn't. Finally, after they had managed to stay sober in way back in the 1930s, for a period of time, which was a total miracle and had never happened before in this way, somebody said to them, how does this work? And so they said, okay, how does it work? And so there's actually a chapter in the AA Big Book entitled How It Works. And all they did was talk about what they had organically gone through. So these aren't something that anybody prescribed. These were literally downloaded. And I am so amazed by them, too, because I love the Jesus path. I love the teachings of Jesus, the presence of Jesus it has so little to do with Christianity. The more I actually learned about Christianity, the more I learned, oh my God, this is, you know, like totally taking away the amazing radical specialness of who this Jesus, this trickster God, this avatar, amazing teacher presence is. And so the more I looked at the 12 steps, the more I realized this is very much the Jesus path. Jesus, you know, talks about, he really gets at this idea of, you know, rather than pointing out the like a splinter in somebody else's eye, look at the mote in your own eye, in other words, the log in your own eye. You know, so that's where the self-reflective stuff comes early on, and that's, you know, the steps 4, 5, 6, 7. The beginning is really just getting the foundation, that three-legged stool under you, so you have something to really rest upon and go back to. But then there's this, you know, inner work that can be very intense, but really goes back and gets at all the stuff we've been holding inside and feeling guilty about and feeling upset about and then making amends, et cetera, et cetera. But then it all leads to then practicing that on a daily basis. That's what the 10th step is. You know, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. And that's the great thing, because you never have to go back and do the 4th step again, because every day you're kind of like, you know what, I don't feel good about that. And you can fix it on the spot rather than carrying around all of this baggage, and you were talking about at the beginning, you know, baggage of, you know, years of stuff. I don't think people choose to hold on to baggage unless they're too afraid, really. I mean, I really think that's it. I think, and if they don't have the tools, I don't know why. I mean, I've come to a point, I don't know that I actually have an answer about it. But I do know that this process can be extremely liberating. And then what it leads to, and again, the Jesus path is totally about this, in the Beatitudes, blessed are the poor, blessed are the meek in spirit, all this. Anyway, it gets to service. It's a path of service, and the 12 steps are a path of service. The 12th step is having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. We carried the message to others who were suffering and practice these principles in all of our affairs. And so really, it's really, I thought, wow, this is kind of like a lived Jesus path. So I think also people get really hung up about just having a Christian God or whatever. And of course, I'm very engaged in an interspiritual path. And so I describe in the book and show the many, many different paths to God. There's a great similarity among the paths, the Hindu path, the Jewish path, the Christian path, the Shinto, Buddhism, et cetera, et cetera. So I say an interspiritual, holistic bento box of tools. And I go through quite a lot, the 5 pillars of Islam, the Eightfold Path of Buddhism, Hindu 4 ways to God, the Jesus path, et cetera, et cetera. And try to just give people options for practicing a spiritual path in a wellness recovery mode.
You know, I think, Jane, also too, your book is very key, what you just explained to us. Your book is very clear, concise. It's not overly text heavy to the listeners. When I look at the book, it has some pictures, it has some guidance. And
it's
some
pretty,
people
isn't it?
Right. And some people will say, you know, I'm kind of like into the natural thing. I kind of do this, but I don't want to be pushed or shoved into something else. But really, your book is about guiding you with the principles that you have so you can expand and hear some other things that will fit into that paradigm.
About giving people options. It's just about giving people options for, you know, yeah, it's not about teaching anybody. I mean, it's about giving people options. Yeah. Yeah.
And also, too, I mean, because, you know, as you talk about the book, you know, with the 12 steps for alcoholics, I mean, I'm familiar with that book, you know, from the 50s on out, with several, you know, over 30, 40 of ancestors and lineage and people that I know. Mm-hmm. So I'm very familiar with that. And many people have different ways of looking at things, and people have come to different places in their life. So this really is not about taking you and bringing you along a prescribed path. This is about taking you and bringing you along and the path towards yourself. And,
yeah,
you know, when we
talk about chakras
all the time, you know, it really, if you don't have your basis of 1, 2, and 3 or even 4 going forward, you consistently will keep falling into that spot or you'll have congestion. I mean, we talk about acupuncture meridians a lot on the show. When I do acupuncture, you know, you can usually chase it. You know, you put a needle here, and I'm chasing it. It's going somewhere else to someplace else. So you can always see that maybe if you might be working on maybe 3, 4, or 5 on your path, maybe you need to go back to 1. Or if you see that maybe something is blocked in a certain area, you may say, oh, that organ system just doesn't feel right. I know my stomach hurts. I'm going to go to stomach. It might not be your stomach at all. It might be spleen. Might be something else. It could be anything else. But it will guide you to a different place when you just have some different language.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. That's very similar to what this work is.
Right. I think, you know, what your book does is it gives you other languages to be able to speak, other thoughts to be able to center.
Right. That's a great way to say it. Yeah.
You know, because a lot of people, you know, these days, you know, you talk about also the crystals. I mean, we use flower essences. We use homeopathy a lot. And that's very similar. What is the essence of the energy out there in the earth that will be able to help you heal along your path? I mean,
about homeopathy in the book, too, and really about the idea of homeopathy being, you know, that essence, very, very, very shaken down to such a minute part of whatever it is that you're trying to get rid of. And so a lot of this is kind of, so in the first step, I talk about power, and in the big book, it says lack of power. That was our dilemma. And so how do we deal with that? What do? We look at power. Power is really what the essence is of what we need to get at. And how do we have authentic power in the world? We have to have power to propel ourselves forward to do anything, you know. I mean, it's not a lot of people have an image of power over, which is a very old paradigm, although we're experiencing a little resurgence of it these days. But it won't last. But, you know, this thing of domination and stuff. But anyway, yeah. So all of these things go together. You're right.
The power of sometimes the power of the word power is actually the essence to understand you can say yes or no. And sometimes to stand in your own power right there. I mean, if you look at the first chakra, standing in your own power, if you don't have a core, you're going to fall over. So the idea giving out the power all the time is really where God is in a lot of trouble and a lot of situations. It could be it could be addictions. It could be the medical community. It could be parents. It could be kids, no matter what it might be. It could be just a job that you were in and you gave away your power and now you're ending up and you're saying, I have no more energy left. Well, of course you don't, because you opened up the gate that said this energy is all going to go that way and every day you push it out. So being able to bring it back in and being able to core down is really where you find your root. And I think once you decide, what are you going to root in? Are you going to root in what other people are telling you? Are you going to root in that's out there that you feel like makes you feel good? Or are you going to root in what you believe in your core, in your morals, your habits, your values, and what you value of you? That's where you're really starting from. So I really think that's where
beginning. Yeah, and that's kind of a belief system, and that's great, too. I think mine is really about tools. It's really about action. The 12 steps are so action-oriented. They are, you know, admitting we're powerless over whatever it is. That's the first step. That's really an action-oriented thing. It's not a belief system. It's really a matter of an action-oriented sort of, okay, I admit that I'm powerless over this. I can't handle it. My life has become unmanageable. And so all of these things are really, it's a lived path. It's really not a way of you know, it's not an ideology, and I think there are so many ideologies and so many people out there teaching so much crazy stuff, and people are hurting a lot. I mean, as a minister, I have been amazed at some of the things people bring me. I mean, you know, in private counseling sessions, I mean, I've heard a lot, and I'm amazed at how much hurt comes from organized religion. Anybody who's a little different or a little more creative or going through a period in their life when, you know, things are not working for them in the standard way, and has taken that to church takes a risk, I realize now. And this is one reason that I'm, you know, I'm kind of in that place you were talking about earlier on in a certain way. I mean, I'm continuing to move forward and work on my helping people kind of work through the Book of the Gateways, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, I don't really believe in the model of organized religion. Even interspiritual centers, I think, can get to be very dodgy. I think the human thing comes in there. And I don't know. I mean, this is my major second career, and I came to a point where I said, you know what, I don't even know if I believe in this anymore. Not in the spiritual path, because that's the essence of my life, but in this kind of form. So I'm letting new answers come to me, too, you know.
Right. Yeah, and I think it's over history, we wouldn't have had this conversation probably in the 50s or 60s, you know, so it's as people evolve, I think as time evolves and
exactly.
the freedom to be able to evolve, I think is key, you know, to be able
to speak. I would say the gateways is, I really literally, when I said, isn't it pretty, I drew all this stuff first, and I am a painter. I'm mostly an abstract painter, but the visual part of this book was very important to me. So it's not just drawings. It's beautiful, full-color illustrations. And you know, as I say to people, it's so beautiful you could eat it for dessert. You know, don't, but you could. You know, it's just, the visual, I really consider this journey one of a pleasurable journey into one's deepest self. So I consider pleasure to be a big part of this, really letting oneself, you know, here are some tools. Use this. Try this thing with the stones. Try this yoga posture. Here's a yoga posture that goes with the root chakra. And here's another idea. Here's a musical note that will resonate with the second chakra where you may be dealing with some creativity issues. This is really about giving people a luscious, delicious, pleasurable journey into reuniting with their essential self.
Right, because
so the way it looks is a big part of it too, is a big part of the book, the visual of it. And I worked with a wonderful illustrator, and I was very, you know, I was a very hard taskmaster in that regard because I knew what I wanted it to look like and feel like.
Mm-hmm.
So,
because life has to be a great journey. I mean, this is the purpose. I mean, we can't get up every day and feel like it's a hardship or it's just not going to work out, because that will just lead us down another path that we are trying to get away from. So I think, could you share, Jane, we've come to the end of our time. Could you share with the listeners how to find out more information about you? That would be wonderful.
Absolutely. I have a wonderful website, janegalloway.com. JaneGalloway.com, and there are a lot of interviews on there and various, you know, blogs and things and links to things. I also have a kind of a project that I've been working on for a number of years called Tribe, and there's a website for that too called TribeAlive.org, and you can see the work. It really is working on the sacred role of the artist. This is really, I think artists are going to save us from whatever this is we're going through as a human world. So both of those, JaneGalloway.com and TribeAlive.org. And I also have a newsletter, and you can sign up for the newsletter on either one of those. And any upcoming classes or signings or book events will be on the website.
Very good. Well, Jane.
Yeah, and my book is published by Sacred Stories Publishing. I want to mention that for sure. It's a wonderful publishing house. And, you know, Reverend Patricia Caginello is very tuned into really so many levels of what is being called forth as our healing right now. So the book is published on sacredstoriespublishing.com. And you can, you know, check that out too. But also the book's easily available on Amazon.
Well, Jane, it was such a pleasure to have you with us. I thank you for your time, and it has been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Great. Thank you.
If you'd like to find out more information about Jane Galloway, again, her book is The Gateways, The Wisdom of the 12-Step Spirituality, Dynamic Practices That Work. Please do click on the bottom of today's show page and you go directly to her websites. And please check out her newsletters. Sign up for them. And also on her other website, both will be listed, Jane Galloway and also The Tribe. Click on both. Sign up for both newsletters. You'll find out some more information. And it's about being able to explore the life that we've been given and all of its great glory. There's so many potentials out there. The idea before that we always had to get a job and do this, that, and the other, now there's so much out there to explore. Please do check it out. And thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Until tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.